In the 0507 budget, there was one budget note that was relating to concern expressed last session that the majority of the agency's workload is from local government complaints and investigations, but that local government doesn't directly participate in the funding of the agency. And I think you heard Senate Bill 10 last week where that particular situation is being addressed somewhat. The agency had no emergency board appearances during the 0507 interim, but did receive a proportional share of the special purpose appropriation for state employee salaries. There were no audit reports for the agency in the 0507 biennium, except there is a change of director review that the Secretary of State is doing, their website says that it's supposed to be released in April of 07, so I don't quite know the status of that report right now, but it should be coming out soon. The major issues facing the commission this coming biennium is primarily the expansion of duties and responsibilities with respect to lobbying, expenditure reporting, and the reporting of public official gifts as included in Senate Bill 10. The co-chair budget currently adds resources to the agency to cover the fiscal impact of Senate Bill 10, which is an additional position, an investigator position, and moving expenses. These moving expenses were not included in the governor's recommended budget or the additional position, but it's clear that the commission needs to move from their current location because even with the addition of two positions that the governor recommended, there would not be a space in their current location for those positions. So the co-chairs have built that into their original co-chair budget. And there's also a recommended addition of a $750,000 general fund that will be a special purpose appropriation of the emergency board for the development of the electronic filing system required in Senate Bill 10. And just to the agency and has met with the DAS information technology people to start discussions on the development of such a system. And we expect to get more information about the time frame for that. And right now we're anticipating that they would come back to the February session with a plan for the rollout of that system that's required by Senate Bill 10 to be in place by January of 2010.
Okay. Thank you. And have Ron here this morning with us. Yeah. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Jensen and members of the committee. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for Government Standards and Practices Commission. And on my left is Judy Stigler. She is the Commission Chair. And I think Judy has a few words she'd like to say to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Judy Stigler, and I am, I think, a newly reappointed member of this commission, and I am currently serving as chair of the commission as well. And I'm just here to do sort of an introduction on behalf
of... Scared to come down here this morning, Mr. Chair.
Uh-oh. I don't think I'm... Only my husband is usually that afraid of me, so... With good reason, no.
We also know you.
Senator Bates, be kind. It's early in the morning. At any rate, I just wanted to say a few introductory remarks on behalf of the commission members. As everyone knows, ethics is that one thing that we all should know but never sure what they are. We can't legislate ethical behavior, but we can certainly identify behavior which is unacceptable and injurious to the public trust, and the members of the commission see that as our primary objective. Our goal on the commission is to be proactive in promoting that behavior in our public officials and public servants, which instills confidence on the part of the state citizens. Much of what we do, however, is reactive in terms of compliance and enforcement. However, we believe we have an opportunity at hand right now to enhance our role of educating public officials, thus creating a more positive environment for operations of the commission. For lack of a better analogy, it's sort of like community policing, the cop is your friend concept. The commission is looking forward to an increased investment in the operations and functions of the agency after many years of disinvestment. With the increased notoriety over the past several months regarding a lot of ethical lapses on part of some public officials, there's an increased interest in the functions of the commission. This increased interest has brought a flurry of proposals before the legislative bodies, and while the commission members take no position with respect to many of these proposals, the overarching reality is that any increase in function must also be accompanied by a commensurate increase in resources. We feel very strongly that we can't be expected to do more with essentially the same that we've had. We feel like we've sort of been backpedaling for several years now, and what we want to be able to do is to particularly enhance those aspects of commission operations which we feel will be a true public benefit. Commission members are supportive of the policy option packages in the governor's recommended budget, but would encourage investment beyond this. We feel strongly that an electronic reporting and web-based assets would improve efficiency, access, and utilization of commission resources and information. We urge investment in development of this process with additional personnel to support those efforts. Additionally, we want to be clear about the fact that we're overall excited about the prospect that the commission can become a more proactive, robust agency which can be utilized as an educational resource by public officials in this state while maintaining the public trust that it will continue to vigorously enforce ethical behavior by those same public officials. We have several projects that we think are important to help make our operations more efficient, such as reviewing and potentially revising some of the Oregon administrative rules. There hasn't been a revamping of those rules in quite a long time. We think it probably would be beneficial if we revised and revamped some of the materials that we hand out to public officials on lobbying, on the role of government standards and practices, or hopefully soon the government, that's the Oregon Government Ethics
Commission.
I'm going to have to get used to that when I can't say GSPC anymore. Overall, we're very excited about enhancing not only our role on the enforcement side, but even more importantly, on the education side of things. We feel very strongly that if we can do a better job and be more proactive about educating public officials about what is expected of them, then our enforcement and compliance side of things will perhaps be less strained, and we will hopefully not see the continued rise in complaints and cases that come before the commission. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions anybody might have.
Senator Lipson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Ms. Digler, would it be helpful for the, I'm going to call it GSPC because I don't know what else to call it.
Like I said, I'm going to ask you.
Would it be helpful for your agency to have the ethics laws simplified and clarified so that people who are expected to obey them could actually understand them?
Well, Senator Whitsett, members of the committee, you know, I think there was an attempt this time by the Oregon Law Commission to do some of that work, and I think there might be some difference of opinion as to whether it clarified and simplified. But, you know, I think probably any time there's an effort to take a body of law which has been in existence for 30-some-odd years and to sort of tweak it and make changes to it, I think we always have to be cautious that we're actually trying or achieving what we set out to achieve. So I don't think, as a body, that we're opposed to any effort to look at the existing law and where there needs to be changes, make those changes, where there needs to be clarification, make that clarification. If there needs to be simplification, make that simplification. I don't know that we need a complete overhaul of the ethics laws, however. I think we need to be a pretty good look-see and make sure that, again, that we're going to be achieving what we set out to do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think we end up making, I think that's part of why we're where we're at with some of the ethics laws, is it's been sort of that layering on effect over the years, and when there have been changes, rather than really looking at it holistically. And I think that's the bottom line, is it needs to be looked at from a holistic standpoint rather than piecemeal.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. I would certainly agree that a holistic approach would be a good approach. And following up on that, it's my understanding that right now your agency can either sanction someone or dismiss a complaint, but there's no third alternative.
Yeah.
And would it be helpful from the standpoint of reducing the adversarial relationship, and also for the education of those that you are regulating, to have the third possibility, letter of education, letter of warning, letter of whatever, to say, you know, you're probably outside the law here, or you are outside the law here, and this is how you should do it in the future to avoid doing that again?
Senator Whitsitt, members of the committee, I think the members of the commission feel that an alternative along those lines would be most helpful. There's a lot of cases that come before us that I think are, rather than intentional ethical violations, they're lapses in judgment, and they are opportunities to, I suppose, capitalize on as an educational experience. And if you want to call it a letter of reprimand or a letter of correction, whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it, there are obviously, in my year that I've been on the commission, situations that would come under that, and it would probably be a more effective way of dealing with some of those ethical lapses. It would take away, to some extent, like you say, the adversarial nature of the process. I think the commission members, we see ourselves as enforcers of the law, but we also very much want to be enhancers of that law as well. And any means, any tools that we have at our disposal to be able to do that, I think we would welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Bates.
Just a couple of questions real quick, Judy. Thank you. And thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Came over from the Far East, and we appreciate you being here.
No, the Middle East. How's that? No.
Okay. No. I would first say that for some of my constituents, the Oregon Government Ethics Commission would be an oxymoron from their point of view, but I don't believe it is, and I appreciate the work you do. We are looking at Senate Bill 10. You said the House is done this year, and I'm concerned, I'm going to share that concern, that we're doing a lot of sort of fussy, busy work around the edges of what we're doing to make things, as far as compliance, much more difficult. I talked to my, last weekend, I talked to my accountant who handles the stuff for my campaigns, and she does four or five others in Southern Oregon. She says she's really sharp, she's a banker, knows her stuff, and is just shaking her head like, what are you guys thinking about? This is going to be just a nightmare for us to comply with, and she's never had us ever get any of us in trouble, which is kind of amazing, because this is so hard to comply with at times, and she's worried that this is not going to be something that people are going to comply with. We've already heard about people who used to manage this sort of area for us quitting and leaving, saying, that's not what I can do anymore, it's just crazy, you've gone over the edge here, there's all these little things you want to fix. What you mentioned earlier was, you sit in the panel now for the last year, seeing things going on. I think basically in Oregon, we don't see people taking $1 million in graft on road jobs and capital improvements going in their back pocket like some states do. You know, we haven't had a sting operation by the FBI like Tennessee did. We aren't at that level. I think it's more omissions of not being able to comply with the system's gotten so complex, and now it may get more complex. We're going to see an increased work. and more problems. I mean, when I see a bill coming through, like Senate Bill 10, that says, you know, you should set up a defense fund for yourself. You know, not that you've done anything wrong. You just need a defense fund so that if an error is made and you get a fine from the commission, that you have a defense fund to pay that fine because you can't use your campaign funds for it. You have to come up with money out of your own pocket for it. I mean, that's something doesn't seem quite right, that I'm setting up a defense fund for Al Bates when I don't think Al Bates did anything wrong. That kind of stuff worries me. And then you mentioned, more importantly, that you see some things that really are important. There's some questions about lapses in judgment, certain trips taken. Now, I did not take two trips this year as an example on a couple of medical things that would have been very educational and important. I would have presented on the Oregon Health Plan some other issues. I actually called the Oregonian to say, what would be your position on this? And they said, you can go, but we'll hammer you for it. And they said, you know, it's probably legitimate. It's like you probably should go with that one. Take a couple of days off your practice, cost you a bunch of money, and, you know, you'll be $5,000 in the hole for it, and we'll still hammer you for it. So I don't know if you're running the show or the Oregonian's running the show. I think the Oregonian is, okay? And that's what we have to put up with. So my question is, after all this, do the things we're doing here in this session actually going to make a difference as far as your view from the commission that we really are going to take care of some ethics problems? Or are we just going to make life more complicated, and stranger for us? I mean, what's your overall feeling about this?
Senator Bates, members of the commission, I hesitate to speak on behalf of all members. We have had some discussions regarding particularly the Oregon Law Commission recommendations, primarily Senate Bill 10. There are some things in there that probably would be beneficial, but I guess I'd go back to my remarks that I think any revamping of the ethics laws needs to be done in a holistic way and not sort of this session by session tweaking that's occurred over the last 30 years, because I think that's part of how we've ended up where we're at, is it's sort of the layering effect. I couldn't argue with anything that might simplify things and make them make them easier for public officials, and I think sitting in your position, when the legislature talks about ethics, they obviously are looking at it from their own self perspective, and in reality there are thousands and thousands of members of the public out there who are come under the ethics laws and are responsible for the same kinds of behavior that you guys get held under a microscope for. And I think, you know, we need to make those laws as easy or as simple and as transparent. And I guess that would be, if I had a term, it would be transparency with respect to the ethics laws, that we need to make them as transparent as possible for the school teacher in Eastern Oregon, as well as the legislator sitting over here, or the governor, or the mayor of Portland, or anybody else. I mean, it needs to be sufficient across the board so that they're easily understood and easily applied. And I think as commission members, we do our best to apply the laws that are there and to interpret them, you know, in the way that we think they need to be interpreted. But, you know, I'm sure that we fall short of the mark occasionally. And I know that there are a lot of things that have been proposed this session which leave a lot of folks scratching their heads. I think probably, to be very honest, and again, this is more from my perspective than probably necessarily the shared commission perspective, though I think there are several commissioners who feel the same way. Some of what is being proposed is more for appearance or has that effect rather than making any real substantive changes towards simplification and transparency.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If I can follow up a little bit on this, these things which in your estimation may be more for appearance than anything else, they do potentially, however, leave the individuals that are covered by this with a liability. Is that correct? I mean, anything you're doing for parents, it strikes me anything.
Oh, absolutely. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, absolutely. I mean, anything that potentially that gets enacted that affects the ethics laws
and
leaves any public official open to some kind of liability.
And am I correct that this whole thing carries over to such positions as city council's members and that
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, a good portion of I would say the vast majority of the ethics laws is applicable to any voluntary or paid public official that comes under the definitions contained in the statutes. I mean, and it could be volunteer city council. It could be members of an irrigation district board of directors. It believe me, we see cases that come from places that people scratch their head and say, I didn't even know that existed. But so it hits all walks of public service.
You indicated paid and unpaid.
Paid and unpaid, yes.
And so, it strikes me that we are, moving in a direction to eliminate good, conscientious people from participation in this process as we're moving in the direction that the current legislation and efforts have been over the last couple of years, the direction that they've taken. I share Senator Bates's concern. It's not this area, but the election laws and the reporting system and the the kind of insanity of it. My CPA won't do them. Because according to the way he looks at it, it is impossible to do them without running into a penalty, no matter how good you are, no matter how careful you are. And I happen to have quite a bit of leverage with my CPA.
Gee, are you related by any chance?
I had the good pleasure to fund his way through school. So when you fund his way through school and he still won't touch this particular arena, hey, that tells me something.
Leaves you scratching your head.
Yeah. And I have personally debated whether I would want to run again for any public office, given the route that we're headed for now. And there may be those who would say, God, that'd be great. That'd save us one. But, I have a follow-up question now that I've vented a little bit.
You're entitled.
I guess it's this thing.
That's right. you have the gavel.
The commission. What was their role in the law commission's what I would consider rather foolish proposals they brought forward?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, the members of the commission had no direct role on the law commission. I believe that the former executive director, Patrick Hearn, and then when he left, our chief investigator, Don Crabtree, thank you. I was just blanking here. Don Crabtree sat in on the commission as ad hoc members. They weren't official members of the law commission, but they sat in and participated in the discussions. And I do know that particularly Mr. Hearn was quite active in that participation. But we had no actual position on the commission panel itself.
Excuse me. I'm curious that the National Council of State Governments West
spent over a year studying this issue of ethics with a group of legislators and others meeting on at least a quarterly basis and taking a lot of testimony from everybody in the world on it, and particularly the quote-unquote certified smart people. And the one ringing recommendation that came out, and obviously if a group of Western states are going to be concerned about that, Oregon is not the only one that has had or experienced some problem with it. But the one recommendation that came out was, you know, don't mess with the laws. It's not the laws that are the problem that you have. It's the education. And instead of, you know, rewriting all of your laws and doing that, get to the principle of what you're looking for in ethical behavior and provide education for people, you know, with that. And when the people, you know, generally stray from that, as I look at some of the classic examples that we've seen in Oregon, there's another body of law that takes care of them that winds up with the district attorney being the individual in charge of it. So I was curious about your role in the Law Commission on this, and I do understand the politics of where all of this stuff came from. So any other? Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Just one other thing. Your mission statement says the mission of the agency is to fairly and impartially administer. And then we get away from that and say, basically, as I would state it, the mission of the agency is to fairly and impartially administer a portfolio of dysfunctional ethics laws.
I'm sorry, the portfolio of what?
A portfolio of dysfunctional ethics laws. And I think
he put that in.
Yes, I was going to say, that's paraphrasing, so to speak, or
and
editorializing.
So, yes. And I would wonder if the mission of the agency is to fairly and impartially enforce ethical behavior might be a better mission statement. I guess what I'm getting to is the Law Commission wagging the GSPC, or is GSPC wagging the commission? I mean, I understand that you have to enforce the law. But how you enforce that law should I think, be applied more to what is ethical behavior from the position of the appointed members of the commission, as opposed to the fine letter of how you want to interpret something within statutes that are, as Senator Bates so eloquently said, just unreadable.
Well, Senator Whitsett, members of the committee, you know, I suppose we could have a long esoteric discussion about exactly what it is that we do on that sort of fine point. But I think, you know, from my experience over the last year, number one, I can say that to a member, they are impartial. They're nonpartisan. I don't even know who is what, quite frankly. And I think we are very aware that we are a creature of statute, we are controlled by statute, and we have a job to enforce statutory provisions. I think that we try to do that in a way that encourages and, I suppose, for lack of a better term, sort of prods people into more ethical behavior. And it tries to be cognizant of those the circumstances surrounding the situation that we're posed with at any given time. We don't just willy-nilly say, here's the statutory provision, here's the set of facts, bam. I mean, we try to look at it very holistically, and that's not to say that if met with a technical violation, that we just throw up our hands and say, oh, well, go forth and sin no more. I mean, we have a way, not a very effective way, granted, but we do have a way of being able to mute the, I suppose, the severity of the ramifications if we see that the circumstances warrant it. So we try to be judicious in how we apply the statutes and the body of law that we're charged with enforcing. And, you know, we try to be judicious in our role as compliance monitors as well. I think members of the commission do that, and I think we're pretty darn effective at it. I'm sure that there are times that either complainants, members of the public don't always agree with the resolution, but I think we try to look at this in from a holistic standpoint rather than that we're out to get anybody. I think we're always cognizant of sort of the greater role and the greater ramifications that our decisions have.
Sorry, great. My last question and comment. Okay.
Sure.
Here it really is. First of all, we're getting dangerously closer not to being a Ways and Means Committee and becoming a policy committee, so I'm aware of that. We're just kind of stepping over the bounds here. But, you know, as I think about this, Senator Johnson isn't here. She was on that law commission and spent a long, hard, and from her statement, painful summer going through all this. And I'm sure she's been in a much more flamboyant way than I can. She's testifying in a bill right now, and I better do the same thing at quarter after. But, you know, Laura sliced, diced, and put it back together and make it as complex as I've seen anything. And yet your commission, on a regular basis, sees the real problems. They're brought before you. You have to make decisions on them. And I would think that your commission has the best view of what really needs to be changed in the state, if anything, as far as ethics is concerned, about complexity of the law or simplifying the law or where we really need to go to deal with ethics problems in the state. And I just wonder if your commission has ever had a discussion amongst your members, you know, out there in the parking lot over a cup of coffee after a meeting, because I know none of you drink. So, we ever had a discussion about what you would do as a commission to make changes that might have real value? Because you see it every day, where for us it's something we read in the newspapers and we know about Joe Blow had a problem, but you see it on a regular basis. Have you had that kind of a discussion?
Senator Bates, members of the committee, you know, I think we've had those kind of informal discussions. We have not, as a group, sat down and sort of done either a microscopic or a broad picture review of all the statutes. But there will be discussions periodically, and you know, as we're walking out of a meeting, there'll be an issue that comes up in a particular case, and we'll talk about, gee, you know, if the statute said such and such, or if this was a little more clear, this case would have been, you know, maybe easier to come to some resolution on, and it wouldn't have been, you know, so cloudy and maybe so frustrating for all the people concerned. And we have those kinds of informal policy or you know, discussions quite frequently. I mean, we have never, because we haven't been asked, quite frankly, we don't sit down and say, okay, here's what we think needs to be changed. Here's how we, from our view, from our world perspective, how we think it could be made better. But we do it on an informal basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll stick to my promise not to ask any more questions. But thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Questions? Please proceed, then.
Well, again, Ron Burson, Executive Director for GSBC, and just because Senator Bates has to leave, I'm going to go ahead and go out of order just a little bit, because there's a couple of things that I think is important to mention about the changes that are out there floating around the building as far as the statutes go. And I understand we're dangerously close to getting away from you know, Ways and Means and then the policy, but part of the bills do have to do with Ways and Means and do with the funding of the agency. But I think it's important to point out that none of the bills that are out there will add any additional public officials. That currently all the people that we've talked about, all the volunteers, all the paid positions, the city council members, mayors, school teachers, all these folks are currently under the purview of the GSPC and the laws that are out there. And the reason, I think, last session, and I wasn't the executive director at that time, that this came up was there was some confusion about the current laws that the GSPC is trying to administer. And there was confusion amongst the public officials, and so that they asked the Law Commission to actually come in. I don't think the Law Commission, somebody asked about whether the Law Commission was wagging the agency or whether the agency was wagging the Law Commission. The Law Commission was asked to come into this and look at the laws and go over them, one by one and see where we end up. And even though the laws have changed, but the proposals will change the laws if they go through, the idea around ethics is still staying the same. You can't benefit from your public position. You have to declare conflicts of interest, actual and potential conflicts of interest. I mean, those things are still staying the same. It's just that the levels and their gifts, you can only accept up to a certain amount of a gift. Currently, it's $100. In Senate Bill 10, that number changes to $50. So in both the current statute and proposed legislation that's out there, you can only accept up to a certain amount of a gift. It's just that numbers have changed. And I understand that it seems confusing, but going back to my budget presentation, this is where the agency has to take an active role, a role that they have not taken in the past, and it wasn't because of the agency's fault by any means. It's they had very limited funding, and they were basically trying to do what was statutory required of them. But in the governor's recommended budget, we have asked for a training position. We have to get out, and we have to explain to this 200,000 people what is expected of them when they become a public official. However these laws shake out, however these proposals shake out, it's our responsibility as an agency to get out there and make that happen. You say, well, how do you do that? How do you get out to 200,000 people? Currently, we have performance measures, and I'll get into that pretty quick. We have performance measures on how many presentations I give. Well, that's not going to talk to 200,000 people. So, we want this person to develop a program that gets out to everyone, a web-based program where you hire a new person, they can simply go to that computer, download that presentation that says what's expected of that new public official. When you have new city council members come in, if there's questions about conflicts of interest, there's a training program right there on the computer to do that, so that we can reach as many people. But it comes back to us, and this is really where I see a big shift for this agency in our budget. There's going to be a lot more resource put towards education as opposed to enforcement. Enforcement will always be there. There's always going to be people that intentionally or sometimes unintentionally break the statutes. And the commission's role is going to be to judge, to look at the facts, and make a determination on that. The nice thing about under Senate Bill 10 and some of the Law Commission's recommendations is that they do allow us that third tier instead of just simply having to give a civil penalty or dismissing the case. We can actually have this other tier of being able to try to correct this type of behavior. I believe Senator Johnson was part of that idea to bring that forward, to allow us to, instead of just looking at enforcement as strictly dollars and cents and sitting somebody in front of them and coming out with some kind of official ruling that you have quote-unquote broke our ethics by our laws, we can actually use it as an education tool. It's also going to be inherent on this agency in the next biennium to work very hard, and I'm talking about our key budget drivers. I kind of shifted gears. I tried to get back to the budget. Is around administrative rules. Judy had talked earlier about that the agency hasn't spent a lot of time on promulgating rules out there, and it's going to be up to us to look at these statutes and come out with rules that are in lay people's terms that they can understand, that they know what's expected of them. If I take this position or if I'm currently in this position, what's expected of me? And so I think it's important to point out that, Judy had talked about it too. We're very excited. I mean, this is a time for our agency that, we've kind of been in the back burner. We've kind of passed, we've had some very small budgets and, frankly, have not really been able to accomplish everything that we've wanted to accomplish. I mean, we see where this body has decided that we're going to invest in this agency, and we're looking at ways to take that investment and, for lack of a better phrase, get the biggest bang for the buck. I mean, really get out there and promote this and show the changes that are made and how to operate inside of those changes. So currently right now it is very confusing. I think Senator Johnson had said earlier that, you know, we have a lot of bills that are out there, and it's kind of hard to put them all together and find out, you know, where are we actually going. And but once this actually comes through the process, through this legislative process, and we find out where we are, then it's really going to be, again, back to the agency, our job to get out there and lead this charge of education through the different ranks of public officials out there. And that means, you know, not just educating the 90 members, which is quite frankly the easiest thing to do. It's educating all the folks from all levels, from volunteer to paid positions that are out there. So I just really want to inform people that I appreciate the opportunity and the confidence from the membership of giving us these additional resources to be able to do some of this work that, quite frankly, should have been done years ago, but we just didn't have the resources to do that. Moving on in the budget presentation, talking about performance measures. In our book, we have included our performance measures, and I had talked about it in this presentation that, quite frankly, I'm not overly enthused about our performance measures that are currently out there. I'm not quite sure if they're measuring what we want to measure, whether they're telling Oregonians what they're getting for their investment in Government Standards and Practices Commission. And really what I've come today to ask the committee is to allow us to go back and revamp these performance measures. I mean, we have 10 performance measures out there. I don't see a need for 10 performance measures. I see a need for maybe 5 to maybe 6 performance measures that are focused on what this agency should be doing. Now, you can ask me the question on what would you actually measure, but quite frankly, it's hard for me to answer that question at this point because of the legislation that's coming down through. Once that goes through the process and we figure out what we're going to be asked to do, then it's time to figure out, okay, this is what we need, this is what they'd like us to do, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to measure whether we're successful in doing that. One of the performance measures I'll point out just real quick is under the training, and I use this as an example, we were measuring the number of presentations we gave. I mean, at the very least, you should be at least measuring the number of people that you... I mean, you can do one presentation in front of hundreds of people, or you can do 20 in front of a very small group, you know, so... I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, having now done this budget as many times as I've done it, I recall your predecessor sitting at the witness table and being very defensive about the training protocols that the agency undertook. And it seemed to me during those sometimes very lively discussions that the training was at best cumbersome. I mean, I never understood why one individual had to drive out to Eastern Oregon and do presentations before the Rotary and before the Special Districts Association, why you didn't create tapes to train the trainers. You could put a video cartridge in an envelope and mail it around to 27 fire departments instead of for their elected boards instead of having one person do it. And I could never understand from your predecessor the reticence about looking at some of the tools that were at the agency's disposal instead of one guy in a car driving all over Hell's Half Acre making presentations to 2 and 3 people at a time.
Senator Johnson?
That would be your district, sir.
Are you deliberately doing an anti-economic development speech into my district?
I was disparaging your district, sir. instead of my very inappropriate characterization, let's call it that great expanse of Oregon that stretches majestically on the eastern side of the mountains.
Well, that's
the
uncharted wilderness.
Loaves and fishes.
Loaves and fishes.
There. Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I had actually talked briefly earlier about, you know, my vision for this training, and I don't know what happened in the past. All I can tell you is that, you know, we are all in this together, and I would always welcome any kind of suggestions that people have on better ways to do this. I welcome from the commission, from the public, and of course from the members here. But my vision for the training is that this position that we are proposing in this budget presentation, that this position would develop a program that can reach many people for a very low price. And in my limited knowledge of being able to do this, but I look at a web-based program where somebody can go to our website and they can download a new employee orientation, or they can download a training presentation on conflicts of interest, or the limits around gifts, or benefiting from your position, any of the number of topics that we have. So not only do we have to not send tapes out, but they can simply download them for free, get them off the web. But then we have to do the second half of it, is we have to make sure that all of these jurisdictions know that there's this availability for their people out there. And that's where, you know, the work will come in. But you're right, we don't have to get in a car, we don't have to drive to each city and say, by the way, let me pull up this website and let me show you the stuff that we have.
Actually, I think it would be kind of fun to see what you could do in partnership with the bar. I could see there being some kind of a competitive thing, just like there are members of the bar who write the CLE documents, and they get great professional cachet over being the author of the contracts CLE curricula. That you could get different legal experts to volunteer their time. I can recall a presentation that Andy Jordan does for newly elected board members of special districts, and have sort of guest appearances by people that you do in partnership with the bar. The bar has a certain obligation to fulfill public service, and what better way than offering up their experts across areas of conflict, good governance, best procedures for boards and commissions. And, it would be cool to be one of the people that were a presenter for GSPC. And I think you could build a cachet around people actually asking you for the privilege of making the educational product.
Yeah, I'm very excited about, I'm sorry, Chair Jensen, Senator John, I'm very excited about this prospect. Again, coming back to the investment back into this agency, but again, you know, it's a complete paradigm shift. It's from going from just strictly really compliance to getting out in front and educating these folks, I think there's lots of ways of getting out there and educating people other than getting in the car. Now, when I went over and talked with all the city attorneys the other day and gave a presentation, I think it's important still to do that at times, because when it comes time for me to inform everybody, these city attorneys are going to be some of my best friends out there to actually get the word out to all their public officials, their city councils and stuff, on what they can and can't do. So we still need those relationships, but you don't have to do that two-hour drive for the hour-long presentation each and every time. So. So anyway, under the performance measures, I would ask the committee to allow the commission and myself to go back, look at what the agency is expected to do and how to measure that, and come back with a good group of performance measures. And, you know, some of these may survive, but when we're just measuring whether we're meeting the statutory limit on an investigation, we're meeting the 90 days or the 120 days, that's maybe not the best measurement out there. At least I'm not satisfied with those measurements as an indication of whether we're successful or not, because we have been meeting those times, and quite frankly, I don't know if we're all that successful at this time. I mean, we've done the best work we can, but there's a lot of areas that we haven't got into. I think I talked about this priority list. I talked about education and training, compliance. That's that list of priorities. Administration, lobbyist registrations, and the statement of economic interest. We talked a little bit about some of these bills that are going through. This electronic reporting is a fantastic tool for our agency. Currently, right now, we are doing everything by paper. As you all know, you get your statement of economic interest in the mail. If the registered lobbyists here in the building get everything by the mail, it of course comes back by the mail. Most of the people that send in statements of economic interest also send them back in certified mail. So We have to have a person sitting there signing for all of those, and it's just cumbersome. And then we're putting them in a file cabinet. They're really only available to the people if they come and see me at this two-level house down here and get up on the second floor and dig through my files to see them. This electronic reporting system is just something to be very excited about, because not only are we going to eliminate a lot of cost for the agency on mailing and receiving the information back, but that information is going to be posted, and available and transparent to anybody that would like to come in through the web and look at my SEI and want to know, my information. It'll be available to them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Some of us, I think, are very appreciative for the advances that technology has delivered to our doorstep. Others of us, I think, are deeply skeptical about accuracy and confidentiality and ability to manipulate data. And there have been instances recently, particularly with the contributions and expenditure reporting, where I think some of us have had our confidence shaken in the ability of the technology to appropriately deal with the data. Talk to us a little bit, if you would, about how you propose to ensure data integrity on an electronic system with backups. And I mean, there's a pretty steep public perception penalty to be paid if someone failed to file their statement of economic interest. And I want to know, why should I abandon sending it by certified mail where I have a receipt that it was received and just hope that your technology is going to take care of me? What are the backups? What are the safeguards? And if you don't know them now, because I didn't prepare you that I was going to ask that question, I certainly would like some level of written assurance that you think you've got the information technology capacity to go to an electronic reporting system and guarantee those of us whose reputations depend on our compliance with your procedures, guarantee me it's going to be okay.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I had a hat on, I'd tip my hat to you, because originally in this discussions we had talked about maybe piggybacking on a system that has been designed recently. And through those discussions, it came out that we've decided to kind of abandon that idea and design our own system, felt that would be kind of a better route to go. And in my presentation, I put a number in here on this system at $1.2 million. When we were talking with those people about piggybacking on their system, that's frankly the number they were giving us. Currently right now, I think Ken had talked earlier about $750,000 or so that's out there that's for this. So we're already kind of looking at kind of less of an amount. But to go back to your assurances.
Mr. Chair. I don't care less of an amount. I want to know we're buying quality. And it seems like you're just kind of grabbing numbers out of the air. Is there somebody software we can go steal from a state that does this well?
Well, and that's what I was getting to. We'd actually had a meeting with it used to be called IRMD. I'm not quite sure exactly what they're called now. And we are starting this process now. We are looking at what we need, what we can design. That is one of the options to see. Is there something out there that we can buy? Is there already contracts with the state? I mean, it's just the very beginning process, but I like your idea of the safeguards. You talked about getting a receipt from your certified mail. That wasn't something that I actually thought about for the system, but I don't know why we couldn't have a system that when you electronically file that, you get an email back or you get something back that says it was received at the GSPC, so you still have it for your records. That's not something that I thought about. And so it's just at the very beginning stages, but I'll assure you, we are bringing the best people in to do this. There is a proposal that I had received from this group. I don't know if Ken has that or if you provided that to the group.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we discussed while you were testifying that there have been some discussions with the formerly IRMD people to set up a planning proposal that hopefully the agency can come back to the legislature in February 2008 with a more defined plan on what this electronic reporting system would look like and how it would be operational, how it could become operational. And and then we'd have a better idea of the funding needed for it. Right now, the co-chairs have set aside roughly $250,000, give or take, to at least get that process started.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I think that having some kind of a reporting mechanism back in February of 08 is probably a good idea because, while I apologize for missing the lion's share of this discussion, what little I've been able to listen to now feels a little like trust us. And I'm not quite sure I do. And I think that having a reporting mechanism back on performance measures based on what legislation passes, having an information technology report back based on what passes. As you say, this is a new way of doing business for the agency, and I'd like to know that all the structural pieces are, the underlayment, are under the agency before we take off into your new brave world. And I would like some kind of report back mechanism, because we're going to be concluding here within a finite number of weeks. And this doesn't feel very settled to me.
I'm sorry. Chair Johnson, Senator Johnson, I agree. I think that we should be reporting back. I think we're planning on coming back in February, talking about not only about this electronic reporting, but again coming back with these performance measures in the interim, saying what we have designed. I mean, we have, like I said, with the laws that are changing, I mean, the basic pretext is still the same. I mean, you can't benefit from your position. There's conflicts of interest. There's gift reporting. I mean, it's just the amounts that are going to change. But we need to be able to create performance measures that actually show people what we're doing, and we haven't done that. I mean, we have the measures that are out there. We've reported on those. I just wanted to come before the committee and say that I'm not really satisfied with the measures that are out there, and I'd like to change those.
Mr. Chair, one other thing about this is, and I don't mean to say this in a punitive way or a way that implies criticism, because none's intended. The agency has a new director. You're getting a new charge. You're getting new finances. I think this is actually an opportunity. But having as much clarity as possible in what you're going to do, I think, would be enormously helpful, including a review of some of your other structural mechanisms. The statement of economic interest, I mean, what is it intended to disclose? And does the instrument that you have now do that? I would submit it doesn't. If you are looking for inherent conflicts that would affect our ability as policymakers to render independent judgments, I'm not sure that form gets to it. And it might be useful at this particular juncture in the agency's history to not just do more of the same old failed stuff, but to use this as an invitation to do a lot of stuff differently. I would welcome, for example, some reflection and advice on the part of the agency and the commission about who should file those statements. I mean, we've added folks piecemeal over time. For example, the ports were added during my tenure here in the legislature. I don't know why ports shouldn't have been in there right from the get-go. And there has not been anything, in my view, proactive from the agency saying this would make us better, this would make us more responsive to the public, this would make us better watchdogs, this would make us better educators. It's just give us, we'll do more of the same, give us more money in a dedicated source. And I think what I'm looking for is that spark of imagination from the agency that says in order to be good and faithful servants to the public and give good customer relations to the people that are filling out our forms, we're making some proactive recommendations about stuff that ought to be different. You're the experts. And, I mean, you can either have the legislature do it to you, or you can be proactive in doing it with the legislature. And I would submit that with is a whole lot better. So I'm just expressing my hope that with an activist commission, and certainly your chair is an extremely capable lawyer,
that you might engage your commission in some serious dialogue about the fact that this is a new day at GSBC, and maybe some of the old tried and trues aren't good enough.
Thank you. Okay, I'll go ahead and go down through the policy packages. Policy package number 100. This is a addition of an office assistant position. It's also a reclassification of the current executive support specialist position. This came about in that during the last few years, the person in this executive support position has been asked to do additional positions all along, or additional duties, and basically through that process is kind of ended up creating this position where they are working in the lobbyists and the statement of economic interest. They are assisting the investigator, and it's basically kind of grown out of this position. The office assistant position, we would look at taking over the duties of the filing and the answering the phones and things like this to free up this other position that's currently doing that to get back into doing these type of things that with the statement of economic interests and the lobbyist reports. An example of that, the benefit that, or a perceived benefit that I see is going to happen is currently right now we're receiving these reports into the office and we're filing them away. We really haven't had the time to actually look at these reports. This is going to give this person enough time that they can actually get in, look at the reports, making sure they're making sense, be able to compare them with other reports that are in there, do some auditing, do some, you know, some spot audits, making sure that the people that are filing the reports correctly. Senator Johnson had asked about the statement of economic interest. Are they actually asking the correct questions? I know there's been some talk in some of the law commission's bills about changing some of the things that are put on there. But I think she makes an excellent point. I think we need to look at the statutes and see what the statutes are requiring. But are there, can we still ask, can we have reporting on this form that still stays within the statute but maybe asks the question in a better way or gets the information that's more useful to the agency? I appreciate that. Policy package 101 is the training position that we've talked about pretty extensively here. This position would come in. They would be responsible for the agency's training program. When we talk about the agency doing a lot of the stuff that they've done in the past, this is really a shift for the agency. The agency has not spent a lot of time or a lot of resource towards training, and this would have very specific resource towards training, and they would create a training program that reaches a number of individuals out there, a number of public officials, and would also be there for the public themselves. The GSBC gets a lot of, and I apologize for the acronym, by the way, it's just hard to say government standards and practices each time, but we get a lot of telephone calls at our agency about a lot of different things that we really don't have any jurisdiction over. I mean, we even get calls about that people think that their gas pumps aren't giving them the correct amount of gas because they think that maybe we're government standards, but measurements and standards. So I mean, we get a lot of phone calls. So not only will this education program actually educate the public officials that come in, but it'll also educate the people out there when they're filing formal complaints. I got a set of formal complaints the other day, well, just 2 days ago, that was actually 5 notebooks full of material, and it had nothing to do with any of our statutes, but somebody's upset with a public official, but it had nothing, this 5 notebooks of testimony that, you know, I needed to look at. We had an individual that came before the commission just recently that they had literally filed complaints about just about everybody, I think except your husband in Deschutes County. But, you know, you have to read every one of them because actually there was a question on one of them, did a public official accept a gift? And you have to ask that question, but I need to know the value of that gift. So we can educate the public out there on really what does the Oregon Government Ethics Commission do, or the Government Standards and Practices Commission, what do we actually do and how can we benefit them? Yes.
And I'm wondering what happened to the author of the 5 notebooks who sent it off believing something was going to happen. What'd you do?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, we send them back a letter basically stating that, whereas, you know, we understand their frustration, but, you know, our area is a very narrow area of law, and they had complaints about public meeting laws. And so we suggest that really nobody oversees public meeting laws except for executive sessions, which is underneath. We take care of those. But the actual public meeting laws, really nobody looks at it. But maybe they could talk to somebody at the Attorney General's office. They're actually the ones that write the book, and they might be able to give them some guidance. Actually, I didn't even see any violations of public meeting laws in the material.
That goes back to a comment that I made earlier. It's my experience in elected public life that most people can take no for an answer if they think they've had a square shot at the process, and that it is the conduct of meetings and public meeting decisions made in back rooms that are the source of a great deal of frustration for people. I would submit to you, as the agency settles from this session and figures out what statutory responsibilities that we've given you, that part of your proactive look ought to be maybe to come back to the legislature and ask to expand your responsibilities. Let's assume that you did become the custodians of public meeting rules. Wouldn't it be better for the citizens of Oregon to know that they had a place to come to have that issue redressed than you just ship them off to the AG's office? And I'm not saying this is a criticism to you. But you just ship them off to the AG's office, and maybe they got help, and maybe they didn't. And somewhere out there, there's a citizen who feels that people, given the public trust, didn't behave right, his views didn't have the opportunity to be heard, and something wrong had happened. And it seems to me that, in many respects, your customers are the citizens of the state of Oregon, as well as your enforced customers that are the elected officials. And I'd love to come back here in subsequent sessions and have the agency say, you know, we really think, based on the volume of complaints that we've seen over the last X number of months, that public records is something that our public meetings is something that ought to be within our purview, and we make the following recommendations.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, yeah, I don't disagree with that. I would like to point out, though, on this, you asked me what I did with this one individual. We also had a discussion with him, and I actually think that person was surprised that we were actually able to have a intelligent discussion on his information that he gave, that I actually read it and I knew what he had said.
Good
and
for you.
Tried to find out what, you know, what the problem was, and see, had he not mentioned something that was underneath, something that I could go forward with, but unfortunately it was not. But I do try to get back to the people, that even the ones that have filed stuff with us that isn't something that I can go forward on. Because I do think it's important that people know that we received it and we give a timely response.
Excellent.
Policy package 102 is was a policy package that was put in. It was a $10,000 that was to study the idea of electronic reporting, but I think we're past that whole idea of studying that, so I won't try to convince the committee for that. But overall, the agency performance, coming into this agency from another agency, I was actually quite impressed with the performance that this agency had done. We are required to meet statutory limits on complaints. There's the statutes out there require us to make a decision in a finite amount of time, and it's a very short amount of time. For a preliminary review, it's 90 days. For an investigation, it's 120 days. And this staff, even when they had lost their executive director and they were only running on two people, were still meeting those deadlines. So the people, as Senator Johnson pointed out, that had filed a complaint with GSPC did not feel that they'd lost the executive director. I mean, their complaints were still being moved forward, were still being looked at, were still being reviewed. The people that were being complained about were still getting their hearings before the commission. The commission was still making decisions timely. That, in other words, complaints weren't dropping off because we didn't meet the statutory limit, and the people, the public officials that the complaints were against, were getting their opportunity on a timely basis to be able to speak their mind before the commission, or inform the commission why they think what they did was not a violation at that point. So I was pretty proud of the group for what they had done, and they had done a lot of other work. People that were filing reports with us, lobbyists, statement of economic interest. People that were just calling the commission were still getting through to a person. They were not getting a voice recording saying we'll get back to you at a later date. And even if they had to leave a message with somebody because the phones were on for maybe they're in a commission meeting, that it just amazed me. The first commission meeting I came out of, we come back and the first thing we do is we're downloading the messages and we go right to calling the people back right at that point. And so it was important that the people of the state of Oregon did not feel that that crunch. And I think, you know, my hat was really off to the staff that was there because they worked very hard. And the commission worked very hard to encourage these people. It would have been very easy for them to say, well, we'll get to it when we can. So I was pleased with that. So, you know, even though we're not auditing the reports that are coming in, even though we don't have electronic reporting, even though there's some of these things that we would like to have that we don't have at this time, the stuff that we were doing, the people outside of the state of Oregon and the public officials that were being coming before the GSTC were still getting the service that they deserve out there. So I was very proud of the performance. And that includes advisory and staff opinions. I think one of the things that was presented earlier was the number of days it takes to get a staff or an advisory opinion back from the GSPC. And what this is, just inform the committee very quickly, is if somebody has asked us a question, can they do something? And we answer that question before they do it. And then if they do that, then they get to kind of have that deflector shield up that says if they do it in the way that they have asked us that if they can do it, they will be protected from the law, even if we're wrong when we do this. So it's important that somebody wants to do something, they want to do it now. It's important that they've asked us this question, that we answer that question back very quickly. And so the staff did an excellent job on getting those answers back again around this customer service issue. People are waiting to be able to do that. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Ron. We're going to conclude the public hearing portion of this at this point. And we are going to open a public testimony part of it. We're back tomorrow. Is that correct, Robin?
Mr. Chair, if you would like to be, you basically have covered the agency's presentation materials, so it would not be necessary unless you want to continue this discussion. We're intending to probably work session this budget next week.
We can't work session tomorrow?
No.
Okay, that's fine then. We'll see you next week sometime.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have this copy Eaton, is that correct? With the League of Women Voters here to
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. I'll be brief because I know you are anxious to move along. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. We have long supported the GSPC and its mission, and we have lamented the starvation of this agency over almost the three decades of its existence. I'd like to comment on a couple of things that you've been talking about this morning. We have strong positions in the public's right to know about what its public officials are doing, and that there is an agency for which citizens can expect action for on citizens' rights to know, but also citizens' expectations that if there are ethics violations, there is a group that is going to be looking into them and taking action. We have monitored all of the discussions with the Public Commission on the Legislature and the Oregon Law Commission over the last several months and their recommendations for the operations and the funding of GSPC. In the sessions in 2003-2005, we strongly supported measures that would increase the funding for this agency because we feel that it's unable, has been unable to adequately take care of the ethics issues that have arisen in the past. And we are particularly pleased that the governor did increase significantly the budget proposal for GSPC, and we certainly commend the co-chair's budget for also providing additional funding to move forward into the 21st century with the electronic reporting, which Senator Johnson has been talking about. I just attended this week a training on the ORSTAR, which is the electronic filing for C&E reports. And while this electronic filing will not be in that system, at least it provides a mechanism for looking at what can happen. And while that is still in its infancy, it does look like a reasonable way in which to look at filing in a way that that would be better for the people who are trying to address their complaints. Our major concern is that there be better financial support for this agency. We did comment on Senate Bill 10 in its prolonged discussions before the Senate Rules Committee because we feel that it could be important to have a more independent and stable funding for GSBC than sometimes the general fund allows. But our concern is that however you do it, you better finance this agency. GSBC has been, has its name changed back to the Ethics Commission. We hope that that bill will go through. We think that's what it is and that's what it should be called. It is the people's watchdog, and it should have the ability to be that watchdog and to carry out what the citizens' expectations are. We hope that you will move this forward, and we look forward to any comments that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Under whose aegis was the training for the ORSTAR system conducted?
It was conducted by a combination of a representative from the Elections Department division that is responsible for it and also the technician who was responsible for it.
Was it a briefing just for the league, or was it?
No. This is a training that was offered to the public, and particularly to campaign treasurers, to candidates, and so forth. And my understanding, this was about the third of these introductory trainings that have been offered. It was at the State Library last Monday morning. And I think it would be, it certainly would be advisable, Senator Johnson, for members of the legislature to take a look at that because it was very instructive, and they have a manual.
I wasn't even aware that it had happened. Now, that doesn't mean my staff didn't know, but I just wonder how the notice went.
I would agree. My staff didn't know about it either.
No, my staff didn't know about it. It was not published.
Whereas the ORSTAR system, I think, may turn out to be a functional program, but it currently is not. Even the Secretary of State's Election Division staff is not able to accurately put information into it and retrieve it. So at this point in time, it's an effort in progress. I don't know how closely you studied the manual, but it's when you try to read the manual and apply it to the keyboard, it can be one of the more frustrating things that you've ever experienced in your life.
Representative Johnson, Senator Whitsitt, I am an amateur, I must admit, but as sort of a public representative in the league, I felt that it was important to find out what was going on with it. And I have been named to an advisory committee by the Secretary of State to oversee what goes on with it and to make comments. And I agree. I certainly have not read the manual back, but the training was very helpful. And they were able to answer a lot of questions that people had to ask about it who are trying to work with the system. yes, it has a long way to go, but I think it's important to remember that this system is being developed and designed just for Oregon. It doesn't really have a counterpart, just exactly like it anywhere else. So obviously there are quote bugs, unquote, in the system, and that have to be worked out. But I think it would be very helpful for legislators and candidates to try to work with it as you are, and then to see how they, you know, what can be developed to give better answers, because there are other agencies such as GSBC down the line are going to be looking at this type of filing mechanism for reports and so forth, and we need to make sure that it's workable.
I agree.
Representative Byer.
Mr. Chair, I'll just quickly say that there have been trainings going on since the first of the year.
Yes.
The Treasurer did participate in one of those early on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Appreciate your coming. Appreciate your testimony.
There's a copy.
Thank you. We've got about 30 seconds. Does the Law Commission want a rebuttal? For those who have listened to the tirades, at least of the chair, you will appreciate you have not been singled out. I have made similar or perhaps even more pointed comments on the floor of the House when various and sundry bills were coming through. So I'd like to, I guess, say you're joining good company. At least I hope that's good company in the members of the House, sort of thing. If there's nothing else for the good of the order this morning, we are adjourned.